Welcome to the Fundamental Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Paul Saladino. This podcast is the result of my relentless search to understand and correct the roots of chronic disease and illness. In this podcast, I will share with you everything I have learned about how to live the most healthy and radical life possible. Thanks for joining me on this journey.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is so good to be with you this week and to share all of these amazing interviews that I am so fortunate to have been able to do with incredible people. This week, my guest needs no introduction. He is Dr. Mercola, the Dr. Mercola. His first name is actually Joe, but I feel like for me, his first name is Doctor. He is really the OG. He is the original gangster of the health and alternative wellness movement and has been in the space for so many years. He originally had a private practice wellness clinic in Illinois in 1985 as a sole practitioner, but quickly realized that prescribing drugs was really not going to get to the root of illness, and became interested in the root of illness and has been pursuing that and sharing his findings with the world ever since. He has Mercola.com, the most visited health and wellness website on the web. I had previously done an interview with him that I enjoyed greatly about the carnivore diet on his channel. So if you have not seen my interview with Dr. Mercola about the carnivore diet, check that out on his webpage and YouTube channel. That was a really fun conversation. This week, I got to record with him on my podcast, and we talked about all kinds of cool stuff. We talked about blood flow restriction training, which, as you will hear, is a really incredible modality for people who are injured, people who have muscle wasting, and for those of us who are just looking to optimize. By limiting the amount of venous outflow from our muscles, we appear to be able to turn on stem cells in the muscles and trigger some really unique factors that will lead to muscle growth. It's a really incredible therapy that we discuss in detail in this episode. In addition, we get into some of the stuff about EMF that Dr. Mercola is so well versed in. He is coming out with a book that is called EMF'd. I think it's an amazing title. That'll be out in February. And we start to look into that because, as we know, electromagnetic fields from cell phones, from computers, from towers that are transmitting all these things, Wi-Fi routers, are around us all the time. It's hard to avoid them. We can't avoid them completely, but we should be aware of these and open to the notion that perhaps they are harmful for us. I think that there's a decent amount of evidence that they're not great for us. And then the question becomes, how do we mitigate this? So in our lives, in our continuing quest to be the healthiest, most vibrant, most kick-butt individuals we can, it's important to think about EMFs and not to be scared of them necessarily or avoid doing the things we want to do in our lives, but to be informed and to learn about these. So what Dr. Mercola has done for listeners of this podcast is make two different websites where you can find information about both of these topics. If you go to bfr.mercola.com, you will be able to sign up for the impending release of a very large research paper that Dr. Mercola is compiling about blood flow restriction training and all of its myriad benefits. That's bfr.mercola.com. And if you go to emf.mercola.com, you will find a page discussing his book, EMF'd. It has a sample chapter, some things you can download, and some teasers, some appetizers into the world of learning about electromagnetic fields and how to best address these in our lives. So Dr. Mercola is amazing for providing those resources for us, and I appreciate him greatly in that regard. I would also recommend that you check out his main website, which is mercola.com, for an ever revolving compendium of so many things related to health and wellness. On that site, you will find the article about my interview with him. Dr. Mercola is actually quite supportive of my work. He's been extremely kind and complimentary to me of my work, and he, I think, would believe that the carnivore diet is going to help a lot of people as well. So it's great to have his support through all of these efforts. You should also check out my stuff, which is always, as always, at carnivoremd.com. You can sign up for my newsletter there. You can download the PDF of the Nose to Tail Carnivore Diet Pyramid that I developed with my good friend Judy, who can be found at Nutrition with Judy on Instagram.com. She helped me do the graphics, and I have appreciated her work. In fact, she has helped me do many of the graphics for my book, which will be coming out very soon. It is pretty much done at this point. When this podcast is released, the final words of the book will have been written, and I will be in the editing phases, which is very exciting for all of us. So check out CarnivoreMD.com. Check out my newsletter, The Fundamental Health Insider, and download the Carnivore Diet Pyramid if you would like. Please share this with your friends and family. And I also must tell you about the cool stuff happening at White Oak Pastures. You guys know these amazing people have become a podcast sponsor. You have all, I believe, benefited from them. Many of you have enjoyed their meats and organ meats and fat. It's all so good. And now they have made a landing page for me, which is info.whiteoakpastures.com/carnivoreMD. I know it's a mouthful, but type it in your search bar, bookmark it, it'll be there. That is where you will find new deals for listeners of this podcast, fans of my work. White Oak Pastures is super excited to continue to partner with this community and to offer special deals for all of us. You can use the code CARNIVOREMD for 10% off first-time orders for perpetuity. And if you are a second-time customer, you've already ordered from them, you can use the code CARNIVORE15 to get a whopping 15% off of some of my favorite stuff, including beef marrow bones, beef fat, that's my jam, beef tongue, and sirloin steaks. So that is a really special offer for listeners of this podcast. Carnivore 15 for 15% off those. Carnivore MD gets you 10% off all first-time orders. If you're not familiar with White Oak Pastures, check out whiteoakpastures.com. They are an incredible sixth-generation farm using regenerative agriculture practices. As pioneered by Alan Savory, they have been shown to be carbon neutral. They are an incredible group of people doing the best work that we can do for the environment. There's a shirt that I got recently from ketogenic.com that says, "Eat meat, save the planet." I love it. I'm going to be wearing it with pride. And that is really what White Oak Pastures is about. The notion that by raising ruminant animals and other animals in a environmentally, in an evolutionarily consistent manner, we can really contribute in a positive way toward the environment in this earth, which we all treasure. So check them out. They are an amazing group. Their slogan is radically traditional farming. And of course, that's totally compatible with what I believe. So anything radical, of course, right? All right, you guys, I also got to spend last week, part of the week in Houston with my people from Ancestral Supplements. As you guys know, they are making incredible grass-fed organ supplements and bone marrow from New Zealand. And it's in a convenient gelatin capsule. It's so easy. Nose to tail is the way to go. There's no question in my mind. I think there's probably no question in many of your minds that the organs are beneficial, but not everybody wants to eat pancreas and thymus and brain, or not everybody can get those things. And so what's awesome about Ancestral is you can get it all in a capsule. The one supplement that I've gotten really excited about this past week is their intestine and stomach. They call it intestine and tripe. And there are so many people finding that their gut issues get improved with this. And why wouldn't they? This is what's so neat about Ancestral Themes, what Ancestral Supplements is doing, the concept of like benefits like, that by eating the intestines of animals, we are probably providing our own intestines with cofactors, growth factors, nutrients to become more robust and healthy. And I think that when we couple that with removal of offending foods, we are definitely going to put ourselves on the right track to improved gut health. So if you have gut issues that are continued on a carnivore diet, or you haven't done a carnivore diet yet, or if you have gut issues in general, and you would like some supplementation in addition to dietary change, check out the intestines and tripe supplement from Ancestral Supplements. My people, they're so good. Check my Instagram as well. You will see that while I was there, I did the barbarian workout, which was brutal. It involved pulling a sled with 120 pounds on it for a mile over concrete and asphalt while I was carrying 70 pounds on my back, two 70-pound kettlebells, one in each hand, and 10-pound ankle weights on each ankle. It was vicious. And guess what? I did it in a ketogenic state on a carnivore diet. You don't need carbs to kick a lot of ass. I promise you, it was amazing. The limitation was only my muscular strength and the structure of my frame. I wasn't limited in a cardiovascular way at all. Of course, I was out of breath at times, but that did not feel like my limiting factor in that sense. And I don't think carbohydrates would have helped in that way at all. So anyway, more proof that a carnivore diet is amazing. And it was awesome to share this tradition with the people at Ancestral Supplements who really live what they preach. And as always, you know, they are doing such a good job at putting back in what the modern world has left out. They are helping us get no sedentary nutrition, get better nutrition in our modern world, which is really working against us and preventing us from being as healthy as we can. You can use the code SALADINOMD to get 10% off at their Shopify site. And you should send them a note and let them know you heard about it here and let them know that this podcast is awesome because I think they are awesome and have appreciated them mucho. So check out Ancestral Supplements, support them. They will enhance your nutrition without a doubt. Check out White Oak Pastures. Check out my stuff at carnivoremd.com and on to the podcast. Welcome to the show, my friend Dr. Mercola. It's good to have you here. I am privileged. I'm honored.
Well, I'm glad to join you. You're really one of the rising stars, and I really appreciate all your contributions to helping us understand metabolism from the carnivore perspective.
Well, thank you so much. It's good to be in that space. It's super fun. And I mean, I'm sure my audience knows you. I gave your bio in the introduction. And I mean, I think of you as the one of pretty much the originator in the space. And you guys have been leading the way with Mercola.com for so many years. So I will send that praise right back to you.
Well, thank you. I've actually next week, I'm going to be at Mindshare with JJ Virgin, and I'm getting a Lifetime Achievement Award for this, recognizing that. Because we've been out, the book, I started the site before Facebook, well before Facebook, and before Google even. You know, two platforms that are not good. But anyway, you know, that's a whole another discussion with respect to figuring out how to work around their censorship.
Right, right. Well, Mindshare is down here in San Diego. Maybe you and maybe we can hang out in person.
I didn't realize you're in San Diego. Definitely, we need to do that. I'll be there for like 5 days. So
yeah, we'll have to connect and we'll hang out in person. Can I take you surfing?
No, you could, but the water's a little cold there for me. I'm usually used to, it's like 85 in the ocean here. So
I hope that we'll get some video of us surfing together. We'll see, but hopefully we'll get some video of people, of us hanging out outside of Mindshare. So that's super exciting.
I will personally guide you through a BFR training session.
Oh, yes. That sounds fantastic.
And what is BFR?
Well, let's talk about BFR. So I'm so grateful that you're on the show. You're always developing cool things. You know, I was saying, let's talk about a few ideas, and you're super excited about BFR, which stands for blood flow restriction therapy. And you're just jubilant with praise for this. So I'm excited to share this with my audience. Before we jumped on the podcast, you said, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen, which is amazing coming from you. So tell me about it. What is BFR?
And let me lay the framework for I didn't develop this, certainly didn't, but it is relatively newly introduced into the United States. Probably not even, it's less than 10 years introduced into some areas of the U.S. It was developed, though, over 50 years ago by Professor Sato out of Japan, and it's widely used in Japan. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of people who are adopting it. And it can be used from anything from professional athletes to the elderly, which is really one of the reasons I'm so fascinated with it, because my truest passion right now is understanding the variables that contribute to longevity. It's living the longest and healthiest that you can possibly do. And there is just no question in my mind that muscle mass is a big factor in that. And the loss of muscle mass, as you well know, is called sarcopenia as you age. And sadly, both of, you know, I just turned 65 just a few weeks ago. And so this is, you know, it's an issue. I know it's coming because about 10% of the people over 60 have sarcopenia. I certainly don't. But when you get to be 80 or greater, it's half the people. And both of my parents had it. And my mom passed away about 2 years ago, and she was 82, and my dad, 89, passed away last year. And they were both frail. They both had massive sarcopenia. And I felt like a miserable failure because I didn't understand it enough on how to reverse it. You know, I basically walked them through all their health issues until that time, but then I failed. You know, they essentially escaped the savages of conventional medicine. They weren't on any medications. They didn't die from medical mistakes or anything, but they died from essentially frailty. And it doesn't have to be that way. And virtually every one of us are going to be confronted with this reality that we're going to lose muscle mass invariably as we age. And here's the challenge, Paul, is that the conventional way, the way that 99% of people in this country, probably plus, understand the way that you increase muscle mass is through conventional resistance training, which essentially involves moving weights that are between 70 to 85% of your one rep maximum. And that is a prescription for success at building muscle mass. No question it works. Problem is, when you're elderly or you're injured, it's like impossible to do that. So you're up between a rock and a hard place. Nothing to do. And I just cringe when I think of my dad. I mean, eventually both my parents were wheelchair bound, and that, you know, once you're in a wheelchair, it's like the end is really close. He didn't even have enough energy to stand up, which is sad. So how is he going to lift weights? There's just no way it's going to happen. But blood flow restriction training is literally, it's an MOS. It's a miracle on steroids. It's just the gods. Professor Sato, in my view, should be giving the equivalent of a Nobel Prize for what he discovered. And it's one of my missions now to catalyze an understanding of this in the health community because of its great potential to improve muscle mass and decrease sarcopenia and all the losses of it. So why is it so important? Well, muscle mass is about 40 to 50% of your body. 40 to 50% of your tissue is muscle mass. And it's not just for looking good or moving around. It also is a metabolic organ. And it's really one of the primary ways that your body uses fat and utilizes glucose. So if you don't have a lot of muscle mass, you're not going to be doing well. And as we, you know, as I said, it's just invariably tends to hit almost everyone. And it's also related to, because I'll probably tend to forget this, because I was so fascinated with this, and I was literally a neophyte with this within the last 3 months. And I said this, but then I started using it and noticing what the magic it was doing. And then I realized that I have to understand how it works. And there's not many people who understand how it works. We know it works, but how does it work? And that's what I want to share with you today, because, you know, for me, I think in a future podcast, we're going to talk about my next book, which is about EMFs.
Yeah.
And that's what motivated me to finally get serious about an EMS once I understood the mechanism, the science behind why it's a problem. You know, these invisible waves that somehow magically harm you. Well, that's kind of nonsense, especially when it provides so much convenience. So I never got serious about it until I understood the science. And once you understand the science with BFR, it's just beyond profound. So where do we start? We start with, well, we'll go into details how to do it later, but I think understanding how it works is really fascinating. So yeah, essentially, it involves restriction of blood flow on your limbs. Most of the time, you're only going to use one set of limbs. You don't use both at the same time. There could be exceptions to that, but it's just usually one. And you restrict the flow, you don't occlude the flow. It's possible you can do a surgical cuff and, you know, knock out all the blood flow. That would not be good. It is not recommended. There's a Goldilocks sweet spot somewhere between 40 to 80% of what was called the arterial occlusion pressure. So that's how tight these bands are, and it shouldn't be painful. But the reason you're doing that, the blood's still flowing, but what you're doing is you're blocking the venous return to the heart. So essentially, when you do the exercise, you are building up these metabolic products, byproducts of exercise, which in the primary one is lactate, but there are certainly others. Now, the danger is that you can use too tight of a compression, and there's something called the capillary refill pressure, which you can easily measure. You can take the palm of your hand and you press your thumb right under your other thumb, and it'll blanch white. And if you do that now, it'll like turn instantly pink, unless you have peripheral vascular disease, which most people watching this don't. So you'll know that you're in the sweet spot is if when you do that pressure, it takes a little bit longer than 2 seconds, but less than 3 seconds. If it's less than two, the bands are tight enough. If it's more than three, it's too tight. So you've got a simple free monitor to figure it out. And there's a number of different systems that we'll talk about later, but how does this work? So you've got the bands on. The beautiful thing about this, I referenced it earlier, is that to get the regular weight training benefits, you have to use a high amount of weight, which is, you know, pretty extraordinary and difficult to do for most people. But, you know, it is very effective. There's no question it works. And if you're a young bodybuilder, you probably don't need to listen to this unless you get injured. Say you break your arm, you fall down, you rip one of your muscles or your tendons because you train too hard. Well, then you can use this to get better. And here's why it's almost everyone can do it. You can do it with your own body weight, but if you're going to use a weight like a bicep curl or a bench press, you use 20%, 1/5 of your one rep max, which is a tiny, tiny weight. For me, I'm not really good at bench press, so I'm using 30 pounds with two 15-pound dumbbells, which is less than a barbell. I mean, a barbell is too heavy for me to do with this exercise and the chest press. So, and that the key thing, though, is that you're going with very high repetitions. That's why it's so light. You're going to use 30 reps, and you're going to wait for an arm restriction. You will only wait 15 seconds between each reps, and you try to do it like three times. So you get it 90 reps in. A lot of reps.
It's a lot of reps.
A lot of reps. That's why you're using a light weight. But what happens in that, and I've been a fan of form of exercise. We coined the term peak fitness exercises, and essentially they're high intensity. And you know you're using a high intensity when you're activating the type 2 fibers. And what happens is your sympathetic nervous system gets activated, and you start to sweat, and your breathing rate goes up. And that happens real quickly, despite such light weight. I mean, you'd just be blown away when you feel this. And then you start to feel burning in your muscle, which is the lactate, because it's acidic. So you get a little burning in there, and that's good. And you keep those bands on for 15 minutes on your arms and 20 minutes on your legs. And when the lactate builds up, that's what causes all this beautiful physiology. So before we go into what the lactate does, it's important to understand that the way you build muscle mass, there's two types of muscle fibers, type 1 fibers and type 2. Type 1 are the slow muscles and muscle fibers, and those are usually that you use for endurance, and they use oxygen as their primary fuel and mitochondria to burn that. Then you have the type 2 fibers, which are larger and we believe are primarily responsible for muscle growth. So the what happens when you've got those bands on is you rapidly exhaust the type 1 fibers and you activate the type 2s pretty quickly. Now, here's the problem, though. When you get older, your vascularity tends to decrease. Your capillary diffusion goes down. So this is a problem because the capillary density or the proximity to these type 2 muscle fibers is really important because they're associated with muscle satellite cells or stem cells. And if they don't have a good circulation, they don't work very well. So the beautiful thing about that lactate that builds up in your muscle locally is that once it's released, it goes and it activates something called VEGF. And that's an acronym for vascular endothelial growth factor, which is essentially fertilizer for your blood vessels. And you start getting this incredible vascularity in your type 2 muscle fibers so that your stem cells can work and you get muscle growth and muscle strength. But the beautiful thing is it just doesn't occur in your muscles. This occurs over your whole body, in your heart, in your brain, exactly where you need it. And this is this decrease in vascular health that's largely responsible for most of the cardiovascular disease that we see. I mean, you just got to activate that some way. And most of the time, we are not activating that. VEGF is not activated too frequently. There's other ways to activate it, too. And part of it has to do with it's the lactate, but it's also the decrease in oxygen concentration, the partial pressure of oxygen that's produced locally, which stimulates something called HIF-1 alpha, which is hypoxic inducible factor. And so this VEGF is just great. And it increases these satellite stem cells. And then you get the growth of the muscles, which essentially is almost impossible to do in many circumstances. And I mentioned earlier that it's used for elite athletes and even gold medal athletes. And there's a physician who treats and coaches many of these athletes, and he's personally mentored people who were injured like weeks before the Olympic event and used blood flow restriction training as an alternative to a cast. Or they just immobilize them with a heart brace or something, and was able to participate in Olympics, which is incredible. I mean, things that are almost impossible to do with conventional approaches. So I'll take a breath now, and you could ask any questions, and we can go in more details.
It's such a fascinating idea. So basically what we're talking about here is for elite-level athletes or for people who are injured or for people who are aging and have age-related sarcopenia, which is sort of this loss of muscle mass that many people have as they age, something like this could be very useful. It's interesting you say elite athletes. The first person that comes to mind is our mutual friend Ben Greenfield, who I saw using this. You know, he had this kind of, I was like, oh, he's got that like tourniquet type thing. And as you noted, this is not a tourniquet. You're not a
clue. Was that recently?
It was a couple of weeks ago. He had something on his
ear. Yeah, because I put a bug in his ear about it. And I'm going to see Ben next week too. And I'm going to put him through a personal. I don't think he understands how to use it well. He just doesn't get it yet. But once he gets it, he doesn't really need it. Like, because he's basically an elite athlete, but unless he gets injured, then we'll need it like crazy.
But you were saying that were Olympic athletes using it in their training, or were Olympic athletes using it once they got injured?
Well, they can use it in their training, but it's mostly for rehab.
Okay.
Because it's when you put a cast on as a physician, you're well aware of the fact of that you're going to atrophy in 6 weeks. I mean, your muscle will be, one third to half the size less than it was. But you can use BFR training on that limb, or even on the other limbs, and it won't atrophy. It's just, you take the cast off and it's the same size, because you get this effect, because it's a systemic effect. It's hormonal. And even though you're only occluding muscles distal to the armpit, you still get benefits in your chest and your pectorals, and you're not occluding those at all. You'll get a bigger chest by doing this. So there's a term for it. The term for it is escaping me now, but it's an unbelievable benefit. And it's really a very small amount of time. In only 15 minutes you can do this. And you probably can do it 2-3 times a week. I'm obsessive compulsive and probably do two 15 minute sessions a day, but I'm just in love with the benefits. And I know what it's doing. So
that's a very interesting point that you're making. So when people have an immobilized extremity, like a broken arm, mm-hmm. they don't even have to work out that arm to get the mm-hmm. benefits. They can work
right.
out the other arm. And because they will have, you're saying, systemic activation of the vascular endothelial growth factor, VEGF, it can lead to improvements, or the hypoxia-inducible factor 1, it'll lead to improvements, or it'll lead to maintenance of the muscle in the immobilized limb. Am I understanding that properly?
Absolutely. And and that's actually where you have one limb that's impaired. It is an example of where you might want to use the other limbs too. So if I had an arm in a cast, I would put occlusion training on, although sometimes you could use it on, depending on where the cast is. I mean, if it goes up to your shoulder, it's not going to be able to do it. But if it's just your upper arm, it should be able to put the band on. But you could use it on your legs too, and one arm. So you're really going to get those benefits.
And you're saying that you could potentially even get benefits to the internal organs. Do you think you could get increased vascularity to like the liver, the spleen, and the heart? You know,
yeah. Any of the organs that are vascularly intensely have large amounts of blood vessels, I think it'll benefit. Because VEGF is an indiscriminate angiogenic signal. It just causes your blood vessels to grow all over.
Yeah.
So you're going to get it some locally in the muscle, of course, but you'll get it throughout your entire body.
And so I'll just recapitulate what you were talking about so that people understand and so I understand. So basically what we're talking about here are restriction bands that you're tying at either the sort of near the hip on the legs or near the armpit on the arms.
Yeah, right. Essentially where the bicep begins and right over the tricep on the back.
And you're not tying them tight enough to occlude the arterial blood flow. You're sort of looking for that sweet spot. And you gave us that great indication of the capillary refill times of 2 to 3 mm-hmm. seconds. But you want them to be tight enough to occlude the venous return to the heart. And as people may know, the arterial pressure in the body is much higher than the venous return. You know, there are arterial and venous pressures, and venous vessels have much lower pressures. And so we can occlude something with a much less pressure on the venous side than the arterial side. We're not trying to occlude the arteries. We're not trying to create a tourniquet here. It's not like somebody has a snake bite or a bleeding limb.
Yeah, but some people do that and they make the mistake. They get tighter the better, you know.
Right.
A little's good, then more is going to be better. You know, the classic American strategy.
Right.
Absolute mistake in this technique.
And the goal is to, like you said, to occlude the venous return so that the products of metabolism in the muscles, specifically lactate, will accumulate, and that creates the hormonal effects, specifically the VEGF and the HIF-1, the hypoxia-inducible factor 1. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, there's other mechanisms like nitric oxide increases also, which is magnificent. And you also have feedback of increasing growth hormone and IGF-1. So all these synergistically are working to get an increase in muscle growth that most people have never seen. And what is fascinating, you know, you are all familiar with the term, you get swole after exercise. And what is that? Well, Paul, this is crazy. You do these exercises, you will literally see your muscle engorge before your very eyes. And the reason it does that is that lactate accumulates, and that changes the osmolarity within the locally. And that's dangerous. So your body is not going to let some toxic process harm you. So in order to compensate for that, it draws in water to equalize the osmolarity. And that water causes your muscle to swell, and you really are swollen. And then typically I've gained about 1/4 inch in size in my biceps so far. But I'll start out at like 13 1/4 and we'll go to 14.5 inches.
Over the course of one training session.
15 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's a significant difference. Yeah.
And what you're saying,
close to 10%.
Yeah. That's a significant, you got pythons now, Dr. Mercola.
We'll see each other next week. You can see it yourself.
We'll compare pythons. Yeah. I think Ben might beat us both, but
and
what you're saying is once you have the bands on, you do a series of high repetition exercises, mm-hmm. whether it's a bicep curl or a bench press. Maybe you can walk us through those in detail, mm-hmm. but you're doing them at 1/5 of your one rep max in terms of a weight.
Yes,
so very small.
And if you're injured or something, like if I was to treat my parents today and they were still alive,
right.
I wouldn't use any weight. And in fact, this does not even work for elderly like that. It works for people who are quadriplegic. They might need a little different variation we'll talk about in a moment. But I mean, yes, and they don't use any weight. They use the original form of BFR, which developed by Dr. Sato, which is KOTSU. That's the term that he just gave it. And the KOTSU is kind of expensive. They're going to have a piece of equipment that's under $800, but right now it's like $2,000. Actually, the less expensive equipment is coming out soon. Maybe be out by the time this is posted. I don't know. But it allows that equipment. It has a pump in it, and it actually pumps it up and relaxes it so that you get this cyclical off and on component. And it's a little more sophisticated, probably a little better, and it certainly gives a unique approach to getting some of these benefits. But that's called KOTSU cycling, and the KOTSU training is when you just have the static pressure on the band. And you can do it either with the system. But for the regular bands, which we'll talk about in a moment, you can only do the static training. But they're really inexpensive. They're like, you can get a whole pair for $25.
Yeah, like anyone can afford this. And
yeah.
Like you're saying, you could use it on elderly people or people who are elderly and are having this loss of muscle mass could do this, and they might not even need to use weight. Or they could use a very low amount of weight and do these repetition exercises and find the benefits. That's pretty incredible. That's really cool. And I love that you tied it into longevity at the beginning, because it's not just about the muscles. It's not just about having a mother or a father or a grandfather with a six pack or a big bicep. It's about helping them increase the amount of lean muscle mass on their body, which we know is an organ of longevity. And we know that more muscle mass on the body helps with metabolism, helps with glucose regulation, and has been correlated with longer life, right? I'm sure there's studies that show that.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other thing on longevity, which is really my primary passion. And probably from my viewpoint, at least, one of the most important biomolecules in longevity is NAD. You're certainly familiar with it. It's nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. It serves as a coenzyme in over 700 molecular reactions, such as just helping you create energy in the form of ATP, actually making your steroid hormones and fats. It's just absolutely essential, and it signals to your nucleus from the mitochondria. And if that ratio, if your NAD plus levels go down, you're in deep weeds. And talk about we know we decrease muscle mass. We talked about it, but that with the sarcopenia, that may be one of the reasons why the NAD levels decline really dramatically as you get older. One of my friends is a prominent NAD researcher and has done a lot of these studies, some of the best studies out there actually, documenting this decline, this dramatic decline as you age. And so say a healthy 34-year-old might have a level of 40 for their NAD. I'm not sure what the units are, but by the time you get to 80, most 80-year-olds are below one. So it's not just a little bit lower, it's like almost unmeasurable lower. Now, interestingly, he's actually measured them in people in like 85-year-olds who were super fit, and they had levels pretty close to being normal.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and why is that? And I'll tell you why. Because your body, you have about 9 grams of NAD in your body, 9,000 milligrams, and you recycle about 99% of it. And actually, it becomes a big issue too with EMFs, because that's one of the ways that you dramatically lose NAD when you're exposed to EMFs, excessive EMFs. But with respect to exercise, your body has a salvage pathway that recovers that 99%. It's rate-limiting enzyme in the salvage pathway, because you can also make it from scratch. It's called the Novo synthesis from tryptophan, but that's way less than 1%. And for every 70 milligrams of tryptophan, you're only making 1 milligram of NAD, which is virtually insignificant. So your body makes almost all of it through this path, this salvage pathway, and the rate-limiting enzyme is something called NAMPT, NAMT. And the beautiful thing about exercise, Paul, the NAMPT levels go through the roof. It radically increases. So you're making more NAD, the very molecule you need to help keep you healthy and stay alive.
So when you're exercising, the salvage pathway gets upregulated and you're salvaging more of this NAD. The sirtuins are involved in that same salvage pathway too, right?
No. The sirtuins are consumers of NAD. There's 7 of them. They're very important longevity proteins, and they perform really massively important functions, important autophagy and a whole variety of other systems. But they're actually, it's interesting you mentioned that, because they're also important for increasing muscle mass.
Right.
So they you know, SIRT1 and SIRT3 are. But you need fuel for them, because you can take resveratrol and pterostilbene and activate these molecules, these sirtuins. But it's like having a car being activated with no fuel in the gas tank. You have to have NAD or these things don't work.
Right. So one of the reasons that people think that supplementing with NAD may be beneficial is that it could turn the sirtuins on. Mm-hmm. Right. And as we talked about, maybe in the first time we talked, or perhaps we've both spoken about it independently, ketogenic diets also seem to turn the sirtuins on as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't they? Yeah, which is quite fascinating. So,
well, intermittent fasting or regular fasting will increase NAD levels by 30%.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
AMPK is involved in that pathway too.
I love how it's all connected. It's.
Yeah, it's all beautiful.
It's kind of complex and elegant, and this incredible dance. And at some level, it's neat because it all comes back to really basic themes of like, avoid EMFs, get sunlight, ground, do exercise, do cool things.
Yeah, and understanding the sequencing importance and the specifics can help you understand the importance of the cycling and the timing, because the sequence is so important. Just like in business, if you can do the right steps, so if they're in the wrong order, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So sequencing is key here. But the other thing that I mentioned, the connection with NAD and EMFs, is that the EMFs cause oxidative damage through a complex series of reactions that essentially result in free, actually reactive nitrogen species that generate carbonyl free radicals that decimate your DNA, causing these covalent bonds to be busted, single and double stranded breaks. And thankfully, our bodies have a system to repair that. It's called PARP, which is an enzyme called poly-ADP ribose polymerase. And NAD is actually a molecule that has two, it has an ADP, there's an actual molecule of ADP within an NAD. A lot of people don't know that, but it is. So what this PARP enzyme does is it sucks out that ADP molecule and it makes this matrix of ribose polymers that essentially serve as a substrate so the DNA repair enzymes can come in and repair that damage. But they can't work without that substrate or the matrix. So the reason I mention is that this PARP, for every time you get one of those breaks that the EMF exposure causes, 150 molecules of NAD out the window. That's what it takes.
For the PARP enzyme.
For the PARP enzymes. Yeah, each one, each break. It's crazy.
So the DNA breaks from the non-ionizing radiation and the carbonyl radicals are causing the PARP enzymes to have to work overtime, and that's going to consume NAD.
Yeah, and the converse of that, obviously, if your NAD levels are low, like you have low muscle mass or you've got this chronic EMF exposure, then, yeah, the PARPs would consume that if they could. But if there's not enough NAD, they can't, and then you have DNA damage and you're getting these mutations that are not being repaired, and that's, we know what that happens. I mean, that's, you know, just look at exposure to nuclear radiation like it happened in Hiroshima. You know, it's not pretty. And there's really not a lot of difference between exposure to ionizing radiation and non-ionizing with respect to the mechanism. I've discussed it in my new book. It's almost identical. The only difference is that the type of free radical that's causing the damage.
Hydroxyl versus
carbonyl, and most of the ionizing is hydroxyl radical. It's not. I mean, there's enough energy in the ionizing radiation to directly break the covalent bond, but most of those bonds are broken by they're broken by the creation of these hydroxyl radicals within the nucleus. Because
right.
These hydroxyl radicals can only travel like the distance of a protein. I mean, they cannot migrate out of the cytoplasm into the nucleus. I mean, they literally can't travel that far.
Do you think that one of the reasons that elderly people have low levels of NAD is because their PARP enzymes are working overtime to repair a lot of DNA breaks or sort of cumulative DNA damage?
Well, we don't know because it's so new. Our exposure to EMFs is really with less than two decades for the most part. I mean, we had other exposures from electric fields, but this wireless radiation has really been less than two decades for the most part. So it's hard to tell. The studies haven't been done, but it's certainly not helping. There's no question it's not helping. But I think more likely, historically, what we've seen, if you are not exercising, now, thank God, if you're 85 or 90 years old and can do extensive weight training, then you can, that would be enough as a stimulus to cause your muscles to make enough NAMPT and create the NAD and sell from the salvage pathway. But if you're not doing that, you know, I think most people, 50, that's the odds, the statistics don't lie. I mean, 50% of the people over 80, that's half, are sarcopenic. And when you're sarcopenic, you're not making enough NAMPT. You just aren't.
Because you don't have enough muscle. That's sort of
muscle mass.
The
no.
organ that's making the NAMPT. So here's the question, which I suspect I know the answer to: blood flow restriction training and NAMPT. So you're doing this blood flow restriction training. That's probably going to increase the NAMPT. So this enzyme that's making NAD. So I guess then the hypothesis or the postulate becomes, could this blood flow restriction training help people with sarcopenia or help people who can't make enough NAD, don't have enough muscle mass, make more of this because they're muscles?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the peripheral benefits. There's no question. The guy who invented this, Dr. Sato, he is 73 years old and his arms are probably as big as your legs. It's crazy. He clearly doesn't have sarcopenia. He's tiny though. He's probably only about 5'1", 5'2". Mm-hmm. But he's got really giant arms.
I want to hear about your regimen with these blood flow restriction bands in detail. And before we do that, I just want to make sure people understand this, just in case people are listening. How would someone listening
in case know? Someone's listening?
Okay, for people, just in case the people that are listening haven't really understood the sarcopenia yet, how would someone listening know if they had sarcopenia?
Like, oh,
Should I do a DEXA scan? What are the, how is somebody going to
know? That's a great question. I'm not sure clinically what the, how that's assessed, but if you're not strong, I mean, if you haven't been engaging in exercise and you're weak, I mean, if you're like 70, I mean, if you can't get out of a chair without holding on, I mean, that's a problem. Essentially, the ability to engage in your normal daily activities seamlessly and effortlessly, like picking up heavy grocery bags and moving around, you know, I mean, you should be able to do all those things. If you can't, you're probably sarcopenic. And it's not like a DEXA scan for your bone, although you could do that. And there is a connection too, because BFR training will increase bone density because of the same metabolic signals. Yeah. I mean, there's dozens of studies that show that.
I was just thinking of DEXA to show lean mass. You know, there's this trend in the people.
Yeah, you're right. You could use DEXA to do that too. But those DEXA scans are all around, but the ones that can determine body mass or body composition are a little bit more difficult to find, at least for me in my area here.
So I guess what I might say to people, and let me know if you think this is reasonable, is if people are listening to this and they're not feeling strong, they have a hard time carrying groceries, like you're saying, or maybe like you can't do a push-up or...
Oh, that's a good clue.
Yeah. If you can't do a push-up on the ground or you really, I mean, I guess, you know, depending on the person and the body mass, like if you can't do a pull-up, like maybe just one pull-up and one push-up would be a good baseline. Yeah. Then you might not have enough muscle mass to really be keeping your body in this ideal state. And like you're saying, it's connected with all these other things, growth factors, NAMPT, production of NAD, which we know we need.
Glucose metabolism, diabetes.
Yep. Insulin sensitivity. So I'm sure there's lots of evidence also to suggest that increased muscle mass can improve insulin sensitivity, right?
Absolutely. No question. That's well documented.
So the list of benefits to something like blood flow restriction training grows. You know, we could maybe even improve glucose tolerance with something like this.
Absolutely. No question. You could, you know, I mean, obviously diet is the primary issue. It's very difficult to out exercise your mouth, but assuming you've got the basics down, I mean, this is the strategy that could be the straw that broke the camel's back with respect to the push that your body needs to get under, finally retain insulin sensitivity.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you do it? Like you said, you're doing 2 times a day and you said that's kind of intense for people, but how might somebody start this program? They can get these bands.
Yeah, yeah. So let me go over that. So I've got the COTS equipment because I've known about this training for about 2 or 3 years, but I tried the bands. I didn't understand what I was doing, so I just abandoned it. And then I was at the Dave Asprey upgrade Labs, I think is what he calls it now, but it used to be the Bulletproof Conference, this past May, and that's when the Katsu was an exhibitor there, and I just wound up getting one. So I use that for cycle, but that's a $2,000 piece of equipment, soon to be $800. And if you can afford it, it's not a bad machine, but it's actually not the one I use regularly. I mean, I use it. The cycling is great for a warm up or a cool down, and there's the probably the fastest swimmer in the world is one that's targeted to break Michael Phelps' world records at the next Olympics. And I forget his name, but he uses it regularly in his training. And he uses it like when the other swimmers are cooling down in the pool, he's in the other room using the Katsu to help him recover.
And help me understand, what the Katsu is actually doing.
Well, it pumps up to a relatively high pressure and for 20 seconds and then it relaxes. And then it does that again at a little higher pressure for 20 seconds and then relaxes for 5 seconds and does it for 8 cycles. And that's called Katsu cycling. And that's a useful tool. And it's something that could be used for someone who's quadriplegic. Just cycling on and off is going to provide benefits. Not as many benefits as you're using with exercise, but you know, sometimes you don't have a choice.
I saw something on the news the other day that someone actually broke one of Michael Phelps' records. I think it was the 200-meter butterfly or the fly. I forget his name also, but I thought, oh, that's interesting. Somebody, like they said, he shattered Michael Phelps' record. So I wonder if it's the same guy.
Yeah, it probably is. I think he did recently break it. So this guy's target, but I mean, there are elite athletes using it regularly. And what we're talking about, the swimming, I use it for swimming because I do my exercises and I go into my near-infrared sauna, and then I'll go into the pool to cool down, and I usually swim 5 laps, and I've got the bands around my arms when I swim in the laps.
So you've got the bands on your arms while you're swimming laps.
Yeah.
Oh, this
yeah,
is like...
And then I also put the bands around on my legs when I'm walking, because I do my daily beach walk, which is typically about 45 minutes or so, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less, depends on the day. And I'm using them when I'm walking.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. Let's dig into it. So that's really interesting to hear that this elite athlete is using it. So you've got the Katsu machine, which sounds like almost like a blood pressure, a sophisticated series of blood pressure cuffs pumping up and down.
It looks like a cuff. But here's the key thing. You know the blood pressure. Almost everyone's seen what it's maybe 6 inches or so.
Right.
These Katsu bands are much thinner.
Right.
They're only, the bands for the arms are 1 inch. And that's the key to know. Don't use a 2-inch band on your arm. It's too wide. And the legs are 2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of companies out there that sell wrong size bands. And the bands that you buy on Amazon for $25 or $15, they have to be elastic. They have to stretch, because it's really important as your muscle contracts that you don't generate excessive pressure. So if it's nylon and not elastic, it won't be able to give. So you want to make sure it's elastic and 1 inch on the arms and 2 inches on the legs.
Do you guys... Yeah.
When I swim in the pool and I walk, though, those aren't the Katsu machines. Those are just cheap bands.
Right.
Much, much easier to use. I mean, I could put those bands on my arms, the $15 bands, literally in 15 seconds, I've got them both on. Katsu is, it's a few minutes.
Do you guys sell the bands on Mercola.com?
No. I have no financial interest.
Okay.
My only interest is a mission one, which is to catalyze an improvement in the health of the nation.
So, I didn't know if you had an affiliation, but I was like, send people to your
side. There's no margin in those. I mean, some other company makes it. They're not expensive. They're $25.
Is there a specific brand? You were saying that there's you want to get the right material. What brand would you get?
Well, just make sure in the description it says elastic.
Okay.
If it says elastic and 1 inch for the arms and 2 inch for the legs. Some companies sell them separately. Some companies sell them as a combined package.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're definitely going to be under 50, but if you buy a separate, it might be 15 and 25.
Okay. So let's talk about how you use them specifically. You mentioned a little bit of this, and then let's talk about how people might incorporate it for different applications.
Yeah. So when I warm up in the morning, I will typically do some stretches, which is no bands, and then I'll do some... Actually, no, I do the stretches with my bands. I do some Indian clubs first and then some windmills without the bands. But then I go into the stretching and I'll put them on my arms for Katsu cycling. And I'll usually probably do 3 sets of cycling while I'm doing my different stretches. And then after I do the stretches, I do pull-ups, do 10 pull-ups, and then I do 15 dips, and then I do 30 push-ups with the bands on. In cycle mode, off and on. So that's just, the normal Katsu training, you do 3 sets of an exercise, but there's still benefit just to do 9 or 10. See, it's difficult to do dips or pull-ups for almost anyone in a Katsu training mode, because you got to do 30. Who's doing 30 pull-ups? I mean, not many people. I mean, I know there are people who can. I know a few, but there's not many.
Our buddy Ben.
I'm sorry?
Ben Greenfield.
I don't know. I'm sure he could. But there's not many people who do 30 pull-ups.
Right.
So it's not an ideal exercise. Now, you can do them assisted, and that would be fine. But assisted pull-up machines are more difficult to find, have access to. So I'll do those, and then I go and do my training. So the training is varied. I typically only do the training 5 times a week. The other 2 days a week, I won't do it, and I'll go do with my regular strength trainer, personal trainer, rather. And the exercise vary on the day. So I will do I like to do the regular group and then the antagonistic group. So bicep curls followed by a tricep. So the bicep curls, I use 15-pound weights. And if it was a woman watching this who is fit, I'd probably recommend 10 or maybe 8, 7 or 5. You know, and if it was an elderly person, 1 or 2 pound weights, and maybe even no weights. Just
exactly.
Efficient. So, because the key is you want to get that stimulus and it'll start to burn and you do it. And if you're not sweating, you either have hypothyroidism or you're not doing it. There's something wrong, but you'll start sweating within the first set. The first set is pretty easy until you get to 25 or so. And then, second and third set are kind of a bear, but you can always go down on the weight. There's no shame in that, but you want to make sure that, put in enough effort and it's getting, you're getting some burning there. So that's one day. Tomorrow I'll probably do bench press, and then I'll do a bent over row to get the back in. And then I'll do shoulders. So there's a number of different shoulder exercises. And literally for shoulder exercises, Paul, I'm using 3 pounds. 3 pounds.
In each hand.
In each hand, yeah. 3 pounds. And I'm going up. So for a lot of people, it's no weight. No weight. Maybe a pound. Right. Half a pound. You know, that's it.
So a steak in each hand. A ribeye in each hand.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, straight up. Doing 30 of those, and then I do 3 sets, and then I'll do with my arms in front of me, pushing them up that way, and then lateral raises. So, and I'll do so 3 sets of those. And on the first 2 days, I forgot, I end those 2 exercises with the grippers. So I just do them by little grippers. So it's a total of about 15 minutes. Katsu is pretty rigid about saying to limit it for 15 minutes on the arms because they don't want any damage. Because there is, you know, is BFR safe? Because there's a concern about deep vein thrombosis, and that can be deadly. It can cause a PE and take you out. But this actually, we believe, decreases your risk of DVTs. Because, they've looked at populations of 300,000 doing this, and they might have, just a few people getting them, which is far, literally like 90-95% less the normal incidence of DVT.
So it's lower than the regular population rate.
Oh, much lower. So it doesn't appear to cause any problems when done properly. Now, if you use these you know, tourniquet bands and you're not doing the way it was designed and recommended to do, then you're in dangerous territory. And then there's a possible risk of rhabdomyolysis, but that's pretty low. Usually have to have some predisposing factors to get that. But again, they looked at 300,000 Katsu sessions. I think they had 2 dozen reported occurrences of it. And they're probably, I didn't get into the details, so there's probably some predisposing factors that led to that. But it's pretty darn safe.
Like statins?
Yeah, that could be one. But, you know, compared to the alternative, what's the alternative? You're going to lead a sedentary life. You're going to be frail. And you're going to be sarcopenic. What is the downside of that? It's premature death guaranteed.
Right. So if people were doing this with their elderly parents, or if somebody's listening to this who is elderly, they might want to start slowly and make sure.
Oh, absolutely. There's no reason to rush.
Right, right.
So start below. And you know, the normal range of recommended weight is 20 to 40%. And I'd say 20 to 30. And when I write the paper, because I just wrote a paper for Journal of Strength and Conditioning on this, it's like 25 pages and 250 references. And I say you just go to 20%. I mean, dude, you're crazy. I think it's foolish to go beyond 20%. But when you're competitive and you're an athlete, you want to do more, but more is not better. The beautiful thing about this, when you do go 20%, you are not causing much muscle damage. So what's the benefit of that? Your recovery is much lower. So it doesn't take as long, much time to recover. And myself personally, I've documented this through the Oura Ring, and you can do it the next day. So you can get the benefits and not have to take days off like you do in conventional strength training. You cannot do conventional strength training every day of the week.
Right, right.
I mean, you can't. You'll dig yourself into a pit and you'll go backwards instead of forwards.
So you're saying 20% of one rep max.
Yeah.
Which may be a little tricky for people to estimate. I suppose if people go to the gym and they're elderly or they haven't done much, they might not know their one rep max. Yeah, but for those people, you could just start with a pound.
A pound or 2 pounds. I wouldn't go more than 5 in that scenario for any exercise.
Right. But for people that are more elite or that are more proficient, they probably will know their one rep max of a bicep curl, or their one rep max of an overhead shoulder press, or their one rep max of a bench press.
Yeah. So, but if you want to really push it, go to a third. But I think that might even be a bit much. Here's the reason: when you have a higher weight, Paul, and I know you haven't done this, but when you have a higher weight, you do 90 reps. What's going to give out is your oxygen supply.
Right.
So that you won't be able to do it because you're breathing so hard. And so it's better to cut back and be able to do the more reps and get the high concentration of the metabolic byproducts and localized in the muscle.
So just to give people an example, you know, if somebody had like a 200-pound bench press max, they would only want to use 20%.
They can use the bar. In that case, if you can do 200 pounds, you can use the bar with no weights.
That's all. Yeah. So we're talking about.
And then you're pushing it.
Yeah. So we're talking about somebody with a 200-pound bench press max.
Which is impressive. Most people can't do that.
Yeah, right. And they'd be using 40 pounds. of the weight. Pounds. And so you're going to go and you're going to do 40. Say I've got a 200-pound bench press max, and I'm going to go do 30 reps. Mm-hmm. And then how much time? And you said you do three sets of that. How much time in between sets?
Oh, that's, I can't think I mentioned it earlier, but that was when I just introduced it. Here's the key. According to Katsu, and that's what I've been following, it's limited to 15 seconds on the arms. Mm-hmm. But you're going to need more to recover in the legs because they're much bigger muscle groups. And the oxygen debt that you create is really quite more significantly used. So you need 30 seconds on the legs. Now, if you have to go more, I mean, there's other people. I mean, there's a lot wide range of recommendations. But, you know, Katsu has been doing this for 50 years. They've got the absolute most clinical experience of anyone out there. Mm-hmm. They developed it. You know, the whole team over there in Japan. I mean, they really are published more than any other groups.
And Katsu is it, am I spelling it right? K-A-T-S-U?
You left out one A's. Two A's. K-A-T-S-U.
So maybe I'll put it in the show notes for people, like a link to their website. I imagine it's katsu.com or something.
Yeah, katsuglobal.com.
Katsuglobal.com. Perfect.
It's your search engine.
So for the upper extremities, I'm doing 30 reps, I'm doing 15 seconds rest, and I'm doing three sets of those.
Yeah.
And then for legs.
The only difference to the lower extremity would be 30 second rest, mm-hmm. but still 30 reps if you can. Now, they say that's 90 reps total. If you can only do 20, so another way to do it is 30, and then you're just so tired, it's 25 on the second set, and then you're doing 20 on the last.
Right.
But if you can push it to 30, it's even better. If you got a little high, if you're doing 30% weight, then it's going to be a 30, 25, 20. You're just not going to be able to do three sets of 30.
Right.
In my experience, just too much. Your gas will be out.
Right. And you said that you'll also use them when you're not lifting weights. You'll use them when you're swimming or walking on the beach.
Walking.
That's cool.
And if you want to do leg exercises, there's a lot that you can use. You can obviously deadlift. You can do squats. But again, the same principles. You can do calf raises, walking lunges. So there's a lot of things. But truthfully, I've got pretty good leg strength. My leg strength is pretty awesome. I can deadlift like a 350.
Wow, that's impressive.
For someone my age, it is.
Yeah, 350 deadlift?
Yeah, so I don't really need to worry about it. So what I do for my legs, I do what's called the Katsu or BFR walking. And as I mentioned, I do it when I walk on the beach and take the bands. I take my bands, put them on bike handle because I take my bike to the beach, put them over my leg. It takes just literally a minute to put the bands on, tighten them up, and I'm off and walking.
How do you get the pressure right on your legs? You mentioned the thumb, the capillary.
Yeah, the thumb. It's kind of difficult to get too high a pressure, especially with the bands. With the Katsu, you potentially could because you're going to get higher pressure with the pump. But the bands that you tighten, it's really difficult. I just don't think it's a danger. But there's right below your patella, the medially, you can just press in, and you should get the same type of response on your hand.
So there's a section right below the knee on the inside, and you can get the kind of
it might be the outside too. I'd be whatever you just press around when you can get the same type of reaction we do with the blanching, mm-hmm. and the refill, then you know. But it's not as dangerous with the legs because it's such a larger muscle mass, and the pressures you use on the legs are typically twice as high. So if you're with a Katsu, I might run it. Now, this is not the same pressure as being generated in the muscle, but the one that's registering on the device. It's like I'll do like 200 or 300 on my arms, but my legs, I'm doing 400.
That's
only because my millimeters mercury. But I would go higher, but my machine stops, poops out at 400. I could probably do 450 or 500. With the Katsu equipment, but it doesn't mean that's the pressure in there. Cause obviously my blood pressure is not 500. I mean, you'd be dead.
Right. Yes. Yes. You would have blood coming out of your ears.
Yes.
So how do you feel after you do these sessions? Say somebody does the band. Do you feel exhausted? Do you feel euphoric? Is there anything people should look for after they do the sessions? Are they tired? You said you recover really fast.
Oh yeah. 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 It's well, I'll tell you, one of the best feelings in the world. Yes. You know, like, I used to say is the relief of pressure. You know, after you have a bowel movement or your eliminate your bladder that's really, really full.
That's
how good that feels. Well, similarly, actually probably even a better, or at least as good, is when you take that band off and that blood rushes back in. It's like, oh, I feel so good. So you have the immediate relief, but I've never really noticed I did notice when I was pushing weights heavier, like closer to 30 or 40%, then I could not do it every day. My recovery rates would go up on Aura, and I just knew I was going too heavy. So once I backed down, I don't notice it at all. I just feel good all day.
Were you tracking like HRV on the Aura for your recovery?
Well, or? Aura does it. It integrates a number of variables into what it calls the readiness score. Do you have an Aura?
I'm getting one. Yeah, I'm excited.
Okay, yeah. So the readiness score is really a compilation of the HRV that it measures during the night. It doesn't do it in the daytime, sadly, at least right now with the current version of the software. And then your lowest, this is probably most important, your lowest heart rate through the night and the time that it occurs in the night. So a low heart rate that occurs right before you wake up is not as good as a lower, even maybe a little higher heart rate that occurred very early at night.
Right.
Yeah. Interestingly, there's one way to hack that score, which is a big contributing variable to the readiness score, is to do some fasting. You fast that day and your lowest heart rate is going to be like right after you go to sleep. It's pretty crazy how consistent that is.
That's interesting. I really like the Aura Ring. And for people that may not know, HRV is heart rate variability. I could probably do maybe you and I can jump on and do a whole podcast about heart rate variability at some point and talk about that. That's a whole another thing, but we're talking about integrating heart rate variability, which has to do with the amount of time between the heart rates, the heartbeats. It's changing the amount of time between the heartbeats, and it's well researched. People can look at that, and then
it's probably one of the best measures to determine your recovery rate.
Right, and you want your heart rate variability to be high, right?
Yeah, the higher the better. Although it can be too high, like anything. But normally that's the case. Want it to be high.
I've dabbled with like HeartMath in the past and some of these programs that use controlled breathing to improve heart rate variability. But I think that once I get my Aura Ring, I'm hopefully going to get a lot of carnivores using them and tracking their data. And maybe we could even do an experiment. It'd be so interesting to do an experiment, having people go keto or carnivore and tracking like readiness scores and heart rate variability.
Yeah, I could set you up with the people over at Aura and maybe even give them a possibility of identifying them as a group so that you can collect their data after submit the appropriate approvals, of course. But that to do some studies. It sounds
carnivore experiments. I love it. I've definitely had clients that tell me that their heart rate variability improved when they went carnivore. So that's unique.
Yeah, interesting. You should know this. I had an I live in Florida and I have a lot of mango trees, and we didn't have a hurricane last year. So I got the reason that's an issue is because that the hurricanes come in. No, I'm sorry. We didn't have a deep freeze. That was the issue. We didn't have a deep freeze this year. No, it didn't go below freezing at all, which is great. So all the blossoms stayed on the trees, and I was able to harvest hundreds of mangoes, and I was having like 3 mangoes a day. My blood sugar went up. Oh, I was like, I just said, what's my blood sugar? Because I felt like I was eating too much. And it was like 120 or something. It was postprandial, but still way too high. And so I went on carnivore for like 3 days.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
When was that?
Last week.
Oh, cool. How did you feel?
I felt good. You know, I love it because it's low oxalate, but so are mangoes. But it was good. Yeah, I did basically ground beef and eggs.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever wear a CGM?
Oh, I did. I did for like a year.
Oh, yeah.
I did the Dexcom 5.
Yeah.
Was it the 5? I think that was the 5 because they're on the version 6 now. I actually wrote Ben a prescription for the 6.
Oh, cool.
I just think he's wearing. But it's kind of pricey. I came to the conclusion this is really not necessary. I mean, it's great just to teach yourself, but once you've been through it, you can just as easily pick your finger and find out what's going on.
Exactly.
And it's out of pocket, and it's like it's about close to $3,000 a year. I guess you can get it for a little less if you're not going to get, but the most cost-effective way is to get it for the full year, and it's about $3,000.
Yeah, it's not a cheap thing, but that real-time feedback, there's something about seeing that real-time feedback that helps motivate humans. I was talking to Ken Berry and Dave Feldman, and I think there are people who are working on this, but I think that if we could see real-time insulin.
That's the next level.
We could see real-time HSCRP, people would be so much easier to change our health behaviors. You eat a donut, your hsCRP just went up, you know? I mean, your glucose clearly went up too, so.
Excuse me. You know, one of the things my CGM did show me, though, is I used to like Thai restaurants, whatever, go out and go look for a Thai restaurant. Well, I had my CGM on, and I looked at my and I looked at it when I was during the meal or right afterwards. My blood glucose shot up through the roof. And then what I learned is that almost every Thai restaurant, this is a warning to people, they put sugar in like everything. It's just loaded in all their food. That's why Thai food tastes good. It's loaded with sugar. So I avoid Thai for restaurants like the plague now.
I used to really enjoy them and I don't miss them now, but I have many clients or friends who say, oh, I love Thai food. And yeah, there's all these sort of sneaky tricks.
You don't know.
Yeah.
You wear a CGM, you know in a heartbeat.
Exactly. You can't lie to it. It's really cool. Yeah. So I think that, you know, what I'm hearing, going back to the blood flow restriction therapy, I'm hearing that there are some elite athletes that are using this, and I'm sure that people listening to this, you know, will be in the camp. I'm thinking about it for myself as a surfer or as an athlete, you know. So it sounds like it does have applications for people who are maybe not even looking to gain muscle mass, or people who are, but even people who are doing pretty good might want to try it for performance.
If you're at the elite level and you want to really tweak your performance, you know, you can use the bands during your sport. Whatever it is. Like if you're a tennis player, do it for 15 minutes while you're wearing tennis, and that will improve it. I mean, it's like it's not your whole workout, but for someone who's a really intense bodybuilder, I don't know that there's going to be a lot of advantages for doing that, because they're maximizing the benefits with their type two muscle fiber satellite stem cells already. I mean, they're already maxed out. It's not going to make a big difference. But if those guys tear a tendon or something and they have to go to rehab, that's when they need it.
Now, and that's a good application. I'm thinking of my friends, Mark and Chris Bell, and they're not injured right now, but I was like, I wonder if this would help them. So, so really
help them unless they're injured. I don't think those guys are classic examples of bodybuilders. They're already
maximizing the muscle satellite stem cells. But for me, you know, like I'm a moderately muscular guy. I'm not super muscular, but I wonder what it would be like to surf with those on in terms of paddling. And that's interesting. Maybe I'll have to try it. So I'm looking forward to you taking me through a
You got to get the bands before I get down there next weekend.
I'll get the bands.
Session.
I should
lead a session at this event I'm attending.
Because you should.
It's such a radical innovation, but the problem is they would all need bands. But anyway, there's a few people. I got like Sally Norton.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Sally Norton's going to be there.
Oh, in Mindshare. Cool.
Yeah. I invited her down there. So she's going to be there. She's coming from Virginia. And I'm going to take her through a BFR session too.
Oh, great. Well, we'll all have to do a big BFR session. You and
Ben
and Sally. It'll be great. It'll be great. So you said that you tried carnivore last week and you did ground beef, but I'll ask you this with a little bit of jest in my eyes, but I had this thing on Instagram. I'm starting this hashtag, and the hashtag is steak dance. So if you ever want to send me your steak dance, I will gladly repost it. And the idea with steak dance is just how happy people are when they get to eat a steak. So the next time you eat a steak, if you feel like dancing and you want to send it to me, I will gladly repost it, Dr. Mercola. I think it could go viral.
This is one thing that your audience would appreciate. And I learned this from Joe Cohen on the website Self Decode or Self Tack, who is a very environmentally sensitive guy. And so he personally figured this thing out and would be taking, because he'd like seafood and knew the dangers of mercury. So he would try to take chlorella, and he would actually physically react from this stuff. And chlorella didn't work. A lot of other mercury binders didn't work for him. But what did work was activated charcoal.
Hmm.
And it just radically reduced his symptoms. So when when I go to San Diego next week, I don't think it'll be an event, but if I'm going to a typical event where I'm eating a regular restaurant, which does not have access to good, healthy food, I will have a steak and I will take 5 grams of activated charcoal, healthy organic activated charcoal, and I'll swallow it with at least a glass of water. And I'll take it either slightly before, during, or right after the meal. Mm-hmm. And that charcoal will bind any damaging material in that food. That's CAFO and loaded with glyphosate and other things that you don't want in your body. It'll also bind the good stuff, but it's not going to bind the protein.
Right.
So you'll get the macronutrients. You won't get the micronutrients as much. But it doesn't matter. So you're eating it. It's like a safety vest, you know? So I travel. Did you know about that hack before? It's a pretty interesting hack.
I've heard people say that. Yeah. Like when I've heard people say that before they drink too, it like kind of pulls out some of the toxins. You know, we'd use it in the emergency room in my previous life.
Oh yes. Yeah. There's nothing magical about it. It is a standard of care, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Pull stuff out. But that's a great thing because, you know, maybe I'll put that in my book and give you a hat tip that I think a lot of people doing the carnivore diet.
Yeah, give the hat tip to Joe Cohen. He figured it out.
Okay.
I'm just using it.
I think for people doing the carnivore diet, they always kind of ask me, what about cheating? And they're invariably going to be somewhere where they can't have the ideal food. And I think something like that, like a teaspoon, 5 grams of
tablespoon.
Oh, a tablespoon. That's even more than 5 grams. That's a lot.
No. It's very, if you ever use the activated charcoal, it's very, very light. That's why you need a tablespoon.
Oh, so a tablespoon. Because generally I thought a teaspoon was 5 grams, but maybe.
Well, something like glycine or, you know, some of the other powdered nutrients. Yeah, you're totally right. It might even be, it definitely is a teaspoon or a half a teaspoon. But no, I think a teaspoon is 5 grams, but for activated charcoal, it's a tablespoon.
It's a tablespoon, and maybe because it's so light or has so much air.
It's very light.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Anything else you've been super excited about recently? You're always like getting the cool stuff.
Well, you know, as I said, the motivation for the sarcopenia focus, it was my parents. And I'm just so saddened I didn't understand this before they passed, because I'm sure it would have added length and number of days that they had, and certainly improved their quality of life, because it is just miserable when you can't move around. Frailty is the worst. It's the absolute worst. And I'm committed to never having that in my own life personally, and also to helping people understand how to prevent this, because it's so easy, and so inexpensive. It just takes a little bit of time and commitment. That's it.
I think that's such a cool thing. You know, my parents are only 4 years older than you, and that is striking, because if I didn't know how old you were, I would think you were at least 10 to 15 years younger than you told me you are at 65, based on your vitality and how mobile you are. And I'm thinking, you know, when I go home soon to see my parents.
Get your parents in there. They've got to do it.
Because I think they probably have sarcopenia.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Unless they're engaged in an active strength training program, how could they not?
Yeah.
Their odds are, I mean, you're literally looking at a 30 to 40% chance. And perhaps even higher.
Yeah. So you can't do a pull up. You can't do a push up. You probably have sarcopenia. Yeah. Something like this could be super
especially
helpful.
Especially for male. Obviously, women are a little less.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Popular, but at least a push up on your knees.
Right. For women, maybe there's an adjustment. And I know it's really, there are very few. I mean, whenever I see a woman do a pull up, I'm always super impressed. So there's probably another metric, but we could design some kind of metric. Would you make any adjustments to this for like elite athletes? Or anything, or pretty much the same
sort of thing. Except that maybe they go up to 33%.
Yeah.
Their one rep max is 180, then they're doing 60.
Yeah, cool. That's great.
But as opposed to doing, what is that, 36 pounds.
Yeah. Well, I so appreciate you coming on the podcast. I love that we talked about blood flow restriction. We talked about NAD. We went into satellite cells. We went all over the place. It's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm sure that people know, but in case they don't, where can they find your work? What do you have going on in the near
future? Well, they used to be able to find us on Google. I mean, I've been around for 22 years. I started my site well before Google existed, well before Wikipedia, well before Facebook. And you may be aware that Google has censored us now.
Oh.
And essentially our traffic from search engines now has dropped by 99.9%.
Wow.
So normally the answer to that is just look us up on the any search engine. You know, you could type in a topic, whatever you're interested in. We would usually come up with in the top few and frequently number one, because we've been out for so long. So many people like our stuff. But Google just said, no, it doesn't matter. You are fake news. You are telling people misinformation about vaccines. It's a whole separate topic.
But oh, man.
Essentially, we're censored from them. And we're not the only one. There's other sites, too. But as a result, you're not going to find us on a search engine anymore unless you type my name in. So the best thing is to go to my website, which is Mercola.com. We've been out there for over 22 years this next month. And you can sign up for our free newsletter. And then we give you an article, a newsletter, an email every day with three articles that, you know, we have a whole team that scours the internet for new information. And, you know, we put like information about this, the blood flow restriction training would be in there, and insights and all the updates that I'm learning, because I feel so privileged. You know, I had the opportunity of seeing patients for many, for decades, and then transferred my profession to really being a physician editor and being able to figure out some of these puzzles. I love puzzles. I found that's the biggest clue. And I think that that's a big part of what you have too, is that you like solving these puzzles. And that drive, that motivation it helps. And so I've got the opportunity where I can search the literature and read it. And I have tools to do this now, that not only PubMed, but something called meta.org and ResearchGate that really, you know, give me the access to not only find the articles, but to actually read them and not just read the abstract. So it's a great opportunity. And, you know, I translate the information out there and put it on the site. So go to mercola.com, sign up for the newsletter. Probably be the best way to do it.
Okay, great. And you said you've got a book coming out in February. We'll jump back on the podcast.
We just touched on EMF. There's so much to go into that.
We'll do a whole other podcast about the EMF book that's coming out in February. That'll be exciting. That's awesome. And then, all right, here's the final question. What is the most radical thing that you have done in the last month, my friend? What do you think?
Oh, that's actually pretty easy to answer, because, you know, I was going to say BFR, and BFR is pretty radical, but I've upgraded it a step. So I think I referenced the sequencing earlier. So this, by sequence, is I do the exercise warm-ups, and I get some really good lactate production going and stimulation of all these metabolic variables. Then I go into the near infrared, and I'm stressing near. It's not a far infrared sauna. These are heat lamp bulbs, and there's no EMF in this sauna. So I'm in there for 20 minutes. These actually have brand new bulbs that were just developed in China. They're hand-blown stained red glass, and they're like 50% more energy coming out of this thing. So I used to be able to do 30 minutes in the sauna. Now I can only do 20.
Wow.
Sweating like crazy, literally. And you don't have to preheat these saunas. So you go in there and literally within a few minutes, you're sweating. So then I go into the pool, put on my bands. I'm doing that. Then here's the cool thing, the radical thing. I've been convinced that of the value of hyperbaric oxygen therapy. So I bought a hard shell chamber, which goes up. Normally soft shell chambers are more readily accessible, but they only go up to 1.3 atmospheres. Hard shells can go up to 3. But beyond 1.75, you have to use pure oxygen, which has a lot of cost and inherent risk to it. And you can't bring your computer in there in pure oxygen. So I go to 1.75 with oxygen concentrators. And I've been doing that after the swim. And I go in there for about an hour and a half and do my reading and write my papers and stuff. And so that's been great. And that also increases VEGF big time. So it's a massive synergy between the exercise, the infrared sauna, which has its own benefits too, and recharges the mitochondria. It's all about improving mitochondrial function. So, I mean, that's the core of most all of this, is improving the way your mitochondria work.
Right.
All those little hacks. I mean, that's the foundational thing you are trying to do. And I'm absolutely convinced that hyperbaric oxygen does it. And most people aren't going to be able to have one in their house like I do, but I'm just so grateful to have that. And I'm really pleased with it. Not only to, it increases my stem cell production, improves the VEGF. Obviously you get HIF-1 alpha increase too, which causes the VEGF to go up, and decreases inflammation and treats chronic infection. So it's just a magnificent tool. I just love it.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. One of the other things I do it for is to, you know, a fear that I have, and I think most people, is that they don't want to lose their brain. I mean, dementia is a sad, sad thing. And
yes,
we're looking at 50% of the population developing it. So I'm doing everything I can to prevent that, the exercise, of course. And I think I'm pretty convinced that hyperbaric oxygen is a great way to do that, because it's going to decrease inflammation, increase vascular growth into the brain, and, you know, just help your body. When you're hyperbaric, I don't know if you know much about it, but your blood cells most of us have a PO2 of about 98, right? 99.
Mm-hmm.
Your hemoglobin is almost completely saturated with oxygen.
Right.
You're not going to get more. So
right.
You breathe 100% oxygen, you're not going to get much difference. But when you're in a chamber that, because of Boyle's law or Henry's law, the gas actually diffuses into your plasma.
Mm-hmm.
And your plasma starts to deliver the oxygen to places that your blood cells don't even get to. So, I mean, oxygen is a nutrient, and you know, it's a fuel. And if your mitochondria don't have oxygen as the ultimate electron acceptor, then it doesn't work well. So I'm very excited. And that I do notice a difference on. And I'm actually treating a few other people in my home with it too, and seeing incredible results with it.
What do you notice with that? How do you feel?
I just feel energized. You can't do it every day because you get oxygen toxicity. So today's the day I didn't do it. And I just miss it when I do my workouts because I know the benefit. It's just like, here's the thing, like, you know, DOMS, especially if you do heavy walking lunges,
right?
You get DOMS after that. Almost
delayed onset muscle soreness. Yeah.
So you do hyperbaric right after that. And there is no DOMS.
Interesting. Wow. Gone.
It's it's very impressive. Plus your energy level's higher. It's just, you're thinking clearer. It's just, I just love it.
You'll have to send me a photo of it. I'd love to see a picture of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll send you a website too. And I'll send you the link for the BFR bands you should get.
Awesome. Yes. Perfect. That would be amazing.
Yeah, again, I don't sell them. I just, just love the technology. And if you can afford Katsu, it's a nice thing. The new $800 unit is actually pretty small. So lots more than what I have. And it's much more, it's, I think, the size of a pack of cigarettes, and it could easily fit in your pocket. So, you know, you can easily, the one I have is hard. It can't fit in your pocket at all. You have to clip it on your belt or your pants, and it's just not as.
Oh, okay. So they're getting even better. Yeah, that would be fantastic. I'm going to get some of those bands so that we can do a session when you're down here. I'm excited to see you next weekend. We'll hang out and we'll do it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm so looking forward to it. I don't like to travel to the other coast, but you know, I make special exceptions, and this is certainly one of them.
Well, I'll bring you all the good steak you want, my friend. Don't worry about food. I'll get you some.
No idea. I mean, JJ runs a pretty good event. I've never been there before, but I'm told she does. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be great. All right, my friend. Thank you for coming on the podcast. I look forward to our next conversation.
All right. Sounds great.
All right, you guys. That was Dr. Mercola. I actually got to hang out with Dr. Mercola at Mindshare this past year, and it was really cool to hang out with him in person. We did some blood flow restriction training. I put on the Katsu bands with him there for the first time. We walked around. He's a really great person. He's a really good dude to hang out with in real life. So many of these people are just people that I've looked up to and didn't know if I was ever going to get to hang out with. Ben Greenfield, Dr. Mercola, all my peeps. And it's just really neat to hang out with them in person and to learn that they're good people through and through, and they really want to help people. Many of you may not be fortunate enough to hang out with Dr. Mercola in the future, but if you do, you will appreciate his kind demeanor and who he is as a gentleman through and through. So thank you, Dr. Mercola, for coming on the podcast and all of his ongoing support. Check out bfr.mercola.com for the blood flow restriction stuff, which will be coming out soon. I'm going to do another podcast on blood flow restriction with the Katsu guys coming up really soon, maybe next week or the week afterwards. And then check out emf.mercola.com for information about his EMF book, which is called EMF'd, and sample chapter 7. That is going to be very educational and I believe a little bit earth-shattering for many in the space who are not familiar with this information, but knowledge is power. Knowledge is power, you guys. I appreciate my folks at White Oak Pastures and Ancestral Supplements so much. Come to White Oak Chela, you guys. We're going to start arguing. We're going to start advertising this soon. It's going to be December 14th and 15th in Bluffton, Georgia. It'll be amazing. We're going to have talks by me and some other cool folks. Will Harris, the owner, is going to give a talk. We're going to have demonstrations. Look on the White Oak Pastures website and my stuff for more details, but there will be much more about White Oak Chela coming soon. So this has been a long intro. Well, actually, this is the outro. I don't want to make this all too long. What's going on with me? I am pretty much done with the book now. I'm into editing. It's super exciting. It's been a stressful time. It's been heavy, but I am so, you know, full of pride and gratitude to be able to share this information with you guys, who I appreciate so much. So if you appreciate this podcast, please leave me a review on iTunes. Give me some support. Give me some love, you guys. If you don't like this podcast, send me an email. Let me know how I can make it better. I appreciate you all, and I will see you in the future. Stay radical.